Mississauga 960 AM presents The Spin, covering the human side of sports, music, and today's news for Mississauga, the GTA, and beyond. And now, please welcome your host, Barry Davis.
Oh, happy Friday to you, everyone, along with Michelle Storino, and we have, go figure, another great show for you here today. We're going to kick this off in a few minutes, where we're going to be joined by an incredible young woman who has an incredible voice. Her name is Susie Corey, and the story behind how I met Susie is going to blow your socks off, Michelle. Let's turn your microphone on. There it is, your microphone. Go ahead. Hey, we need someone to turn this microphone on. That's not working either. All right, you know what? I guess I'm doing the show alone today. Oh, there we go. Try now.
What about now? Barry.
Executive producer Jody Panu comes in and turns off all the microphones for us. But
we can't stop blaming Jody for everything.
I know.
It's okay.
She's the best.
Yeah.
So getting back to my point, our story about how I met Susie and some of the things that Susie has been doing aside from music is pretty cool. And if that weren't enough, she joined me on stage a few weeks ago.
And upstaged you, I heard.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
that's okay.
I want a chance to show that I can actually do it.
Oh.
So we are going to perform live here in the Saga Studios. It's going to be an encore performance of what we did a couple of weeks ago.
Nice. Looking forward to it. Started out a young girl a little bit shy. Sparkle of hope in my daddy's eyes. Things from Susie Corey here on The Spin on News Talk Saga 960, and we are thrilled to have with us in studio
the aforementioned Susie Corey. And man, I don't even know where to begin with you. I hear that song and I say, this woman should be on the radio all the time. This woman should be nominated for Juno Awards. And here you are working a full-time job to make ends meet on the side. You are doing music in whatever spare time you may have, right? Tell us about what has gone on in your life that brought you to where you are right now.
Well, first of all, Barry and Michelle, I want to say thank you so much for having me on your show. This is awesome. And it's funny that you mentioned, you know, this song should be on the radio, and there it is.
So technically, Barry was just doing what he feels, and it's now on the radio.
It's all part of the job.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, and so, yeah, like you said, you know, I think sometimes on social media people think that you're doing that all the time, and that's kind of my life, but I do have other things going on as well, everyday kind of things, being a mom, having another job, and still trying to do the music thing as well.
That's amazing. You guys need to share the story of how you two met, which was literally 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and it's crazy though, isn't it?
It is serendipity.
Why don't you begin?
So yeah, a friend of mine who I work with, you know, she told me about your band.
You can put out her name because I know she's listening.
Lucky.
Yes.
Yes, Lucky. Hello, big shout out to Lucky. She's also one of my biggest supporters.
She's probably fainted. Is she on the job right now?
I don't know. Probably.
Okay.
She usually works nights. So anyways, yeah, you know, I was telling you earlier, I don't get out much. I don't go out a lot unless it's kind of music related or something related to what I'm trying to do. And so I've got to always have something involving me. And that's just the truth. So she told me about...
Selfish, if you ask me.
I'm going to tell it like it is. So she told me about your band. And the Tom Petty covers, and I'm a big Tom Petty fan and Stevie Nicks. So I said, okay, listen, let's cut a deal here. And this is the business side of me coming out. And I said, sure, I'll come on out, but you got to tell them I'm going to do the Stevie part in Stop Dragging My Heart Around. And literally half an hour later, I get a text back saying, yep, he said fine.
So I get a message from, and if my microphone sounds a little bit off, folks, we apologize. We're having some technical issues here. So I get a message from Lucky saying, we're coming to your show. Do you mind if a friend of mine comes out and sings? And I said, yeah, sure. I mean, can she sing? Is she any good? Oh, yeah, she's really good. And my thinking is, Michelle, I mean, you hear, is she? Oh, yeah, my friend is great, right? And how many times, if I had a dime for every time somebody said, yeah, my friend is great, let them come up and sing with you, I'd have a pocket full of dimes, right?
Right.
But I said, okay, you know what? I like it when someone comes up and sings, and I trust Lucky, so... We didn't have a chance to talk beforehand. We didn't have a chance to rehearse or do anything. And I don't even know if you knew how soon the song was coming up, but the song came up. It was, I think, second in the second set. And I said, we have someone here who wants to come up and sing. Would you be interested? And all of a sudden, there you are.
So you introduced her without even having her name. So you're like, we have someone here who wants to sing.
I knew your name was Susie.
Right. And that was it.
Yeah.
Sweet. One name deal. That's okay. Lots of people make it with one name, Seal, yes. Madonna, right?
Yeah, Susie came up, we started playing the song, and it sounded incredible. And I'm the guys in the band were all looking at each other going, okay, who the hell is this? We got a ringer here. And then the next day, I on the internet, and somebody had reposted the video for Pretty Little Things. Is that the song?
Yes, okay. Yeah.
The video, and it was just a snippet of the video, and here you are sitting on a van, and I'm like, oh my God, this woman can sing. Like, who is she? So I've started to look into a little bit more about what you're doing, and you just came back from Austin, Texas. So what were you doing out there?
I went for the first time for the South by Southwest. I wasn't there for the whole conference, but I went out for a couple of days because I heard that there was a showcase happening at the Arlen Studios, which is owned by the nephew of Willie Nelson.
Oh, nice.
And it was really cool just to be out there and check out what it's all about. So I wasn't performing or anything, but just being there was pretty amazing.
And talk about this shoot of you have a few music videos on your website, which is susiecorey.com, right. If you want to check it out as well. But you have a few different releases here. You have The Secret Garden, you have Pretty Little Things, is that right? And Mom Mondays?
Yeah, because I also do motivational speaking. So the Mo Mondays is more talks. And what I do is I tie in the music to motivational talks.
You do that too?
Yes, I'm Superwoman. Yeah.
And raised two children.
And did a radio show. There you go. I do it all.
We've got so much we've got to get into. But but finish the point that you were talking about, the video. Yes. And I'm watching the video, and the dudes in the video with you looked awfully familiar, and now I know why they look familiar. Who was playing with you in that video?
So two of the guys in that video are from Puddle of Mud. The bass player is Ben White, who's not from Puddle of Mud, but the drummer and the guitarist were both from Puddle of Mud. And Dave Moreno, who's the drummer in the video, is actually the real drummer on the track, along with my producer who's playing. And I was mentioning Gary Morse, who plays pedal steel guitar. And, you know, the funny thing about the whole thing is that I'm someone who listens to a lot of rock, and it's kind of what I grew up on. And then, you know, organically, when I started writing my own stuff, it was turning into country. And I remember my producer saying, you know, we should add a little pedal steel guitar. And I'm thinking, pedal steel guitar? I don't know, you know, about this. When they put it in, I loved it. It sounds amazing. And, you know, I said to my producer, this is the best thing you could have done for the song.
So how did you even hook up with all those other guys?
So how do we connect the dots? How do you get to going from a person who works full time and raises your kids to now deciding to pursue this?
Okay, so one story I keep talking about, which is really the trigger of all of this, is that about 3 years ago, I had just moved, you know, it was a few months ago that I moved back to North America after having lived in the Middle East for about 13 years. And yeah.
Why? What brought you to the Middle East?
Long story. You'd need another whole radio show for that one. So I moved back. It's my birthday. People are saying, oh, now that you're back in North America with your buddies and friends, what are you going to do? And I said, you know what? I want to meet the person who ever instilled in me this feeling of wanting to become a performer. And so I bought a ticket, went to LA, found this person's address, this performer, and drove to his home. And I know, I'm sounding like a stalker, but I'm not. And when I'm 2 minutes away, I see him walking in the street, and I drove up to him, and it was Axl Rose from Guns N' Roses.
Come on.
Yeah.
Safe to say you recognized him right away.
What I recognized, oddly enough, was a tattoo on his leg because he was wearing shorts and I could see the back of him, but I knew that tattoo because I had posters for years.
So you were a bit of a Guns N' Roses fan?
Just a little teeny bit. And
how did you know where he lived?
It's on Google. I know that's crazy, but seriously, Google it right now. You'll find it.
I'm going to do that while you're talking.
Okay. And so, you know, that whole experience of meeting my biggest possible idol, when I first said it, it sounded so crazy. But then when it happened, it made me realize that anything that I really thought of and wanted to do was possible. I mean, that was the craziest possible thing I could have suggested. And it happened.
Right.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
I get back to Toronto and I go, you know what?
If I can make that happen, I can make this happen.
I'm doing the music. I'm getting the Grammy.
Yeah.
And, you know, now it's not so much about the Grammy. It's just having a career in music. It didn't seem so foreign. And in the 2 years that I've started, I mean, it's just been nuts. It's been crazy. And the things that I've, you know, you said, how'd you go from F to Z or, you know, I started off in Toronto and I worked with John Angus MacDonald from The Trues.
Good friend of the show. I've had him on the show before.
Well, there you go. And
great
he
guy.
Was incredible. And he worked with me on a rock EP. And then, you know, I got introduced to my current producer, who also happens to be Sebastian Bach's guitarist. His name is Brent Woods. And I started off wanting to work with him in LA because I wanted every excuse to be in LA.
Right.
And the other reason was because he'd worked with Vince Neil. He's done stuff for Gene Simmons of Kiss and Ace Frehley, and he's currently Sebastian Bach's guitarist. So I thought, you know, perfect. This is my rock guy.
You know, you're going to be lining up a whole bunch of guests for us in the near future, right? Because I
Barry's salivating right now, folks. If you're wondering naming all these artists and these producers. And
Susie Corey joins us, by the way, here in studio. You can't just yada 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 over your meeting with Axl Rose. Like, what happened? Did you go for drinks? Did you chat? Did you ask him a million and one questions, like I'm asking you? Like, what happened?
I wish I had a really exciting story, but the truth of the matter is, he just, you know, I met him almost halfway to his house, and he said, "Just drive up to my driveway."
Hang on, he didn't think you were a stalker and wanted you.
I think they have a vibe for these things, you know, and when I approached him, I was talking to him like we're talking right now. And I said, listen, I'm not crazy or anything. It's just that I'm from Toronto.
How many encounters start like that, though? Listen, I'm not crazy, but
usually that is.
But it's how you say it.
Yeah, absolutely.
With a smile.
Was he nice to you, though?
Very. And that's the weirdest part, because I didn't know what to expect. You know, everybody kind of knew he had a reputation. Nobody had seen him for about a year and a half, because this is before Guns N' Roses reunited. Yeah. It was about 2 weeks before they announced the reuniting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Is that even a word, reuniting?
Yeah.
Reunion.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't know. Nobody had seen him for a long time. And when I met him, I didn't know if he was going to go nuts or go get out of here, you know, who are you? He was so kind and polite and very soft-spoken, and I'm so happy, because, you know, people sometimes talk about how it's not necessarily great to meet your heroes. Well, this was not the case. I was really excited.
Did you at least get a selfie with him?
Well, not a selfie. I had a friend take a picture of us, because I had a friend with me, and now here's the crazier part. So,
because it gets crazier, Michelle.
I'm telling you, we're going to devote this whole show here to me, because I got that many stories for you. Well, I post the picture on Facebook minutes after we took it, and my friends are like, oh my God, you know, you did it, because what seemed crazy actually happened. And a week later, I'm back in Toronto, and all of a sudden friends start texting me, hey, did you see? Oh my God, you're all over the internet. And I'm like, what are you talking about? They go, the picture with Axel. And it turned out that an agency in France had picked this picture up and posted it in this article. And then Blabbermouth.com, which is like the rock publication online, posts it and says, first picture of Axl Rose with fan Susie Corey.
Oh, get out of here. Nice.
And I'm like, wow, you know, you have this plan of having this little thing happen where you're trying to create something for yourself. And then it blows up into something way bigger than what I expected.
So nice.
That was cool. I had my 15 minutes of fame with Axl.
Well, you never know, because you may have more fame with Axl Rose somewhere down the line, right?
Well, in my recent talk, you know, the motivational speaking, that's one of the things I said. I said, did you see the Oscar performance with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga? Yeah, well, there's going to be another one with me and Axl. So
maybe not as intimate as those, because everyone's like, are they together? Everyone, that's the only thing people question. Hey, that's the only thing they were like, that was such a great performance. But then that's the number one thing that they go to. But yeah, no, that's really awesome. That's an amazing story. And I like that too. It's true. When you can kind of defy the odds in something that's, I don't want to say trivial, but technically it's trivial compared to other things, right? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Then it just kind of spurs you into, okay, well, what else can I do?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, these things, I find that as we grow older and we become adults, you kind of lose that sense of imagination and dreaming and the possibilities of things that are, you know, could happen. You try and be realistic. And sometimes that's actually the problem. It's when you just let things go and a whole new world opens up. And I have another story for you, if you like to.
Go.
I
was going to ask you a question, but instead...
No, go ahead. Ask me the question, then we'll get to the story.
Okay. Now, at what point in your life did music become a passion or a calling? Because I know most people who are musicians, and it's kind of weird to say calling, but I know so many people that it's in your DNA, it's in your blood. I have to make music, whether for a living or just in my spare time, but I just have this need. It just makes me feel good. Were you this little girl that was taking piano lessons, and while most kids say no, you were, I love it? Like, what was the story?
So the funny thing is, you know, I can never remember not wanting to sing, and just, I found it fun and I loved singing and I wanted the attention of family and so on. But it wasn't until I discovered Guns N' Roses and saw Axl Rose as a performer that I realized, you know what, that's what I want to be doing, because I want to have that kind of effect on people and that kind of energy that he had on stage. But I remember telling my parents, and they were like, over our dead body, you are not becoming a performer. You know, it's not something we do. It was a very strict Middle Eastern household.
Do you have a lot of brothers and sisters in
the
family?
One brother.
Okay.
And he was very straight-laced, still is. And so I was the nut case of the family. But needless to say, I didn't end up, you know, following that path. And it's not to blame my parents. In the end, you know, it's our decision whether we do or don't. I ended up following a completely different path that I kind of explained to you. I ended up in the Middle East, lived there for 13 years. And it wasn't until I came back and had that happen with Axl that it brought back a lot of what I had felt when I was a child and reminded me, that's actually what I really want to be doing. And I've got to do this now for
myself.
So
when you were in the Middle East, you didn't sing at all or do anything like that at all?
No, well, I hosted a radio show. And so that was my kind of little thing.
What kind of radio show would you be hosting in the Middle East?
It was called Blah, Blah, Blah. So it was a talk show and we played top 40 hits. So I had to listen to the same 10 songs over and over again.
And you, that didn't inspire you?
What's that?
That it's, didn't inspire you to make your own music? To think, I'm here, I'm playing all these top 40 hits. I should write a song and just kind of slip it in every once in a while?
Yeah, well, you know, it started to come back to me. I kind of connected with a few musicians there, but it really wasn't going to go anywhere. Because unless you're singing in Arabic, you could never really truly succeed and make it a career. And that's not to say, you know, there's people who've defied the odds, but you'll never have major success there. Unless you're singing in Arabic. And I tried, I did, but I didn't feel it. Having grown up in North America, really for me, English was the language I need to sing in.
So you weren't in bands when you were a teenager, performing, doing anything like that?
I mean, I would sing sometimes for fun, but no, I a lot of times
you're
I was in my
bedroom.
You're kidding
me. Yeah. Did you take lessons, play any instruments, do anything like that as a kid?
Only recently did I take like a few lessons here and there, you know, with the odd teacher, just to kind of have some kind of technique with singing.
It's amazing.
That's awesome.
It really is. Okay, so you meet Axl Rose. That's great. But how do you go about convincing management or, you know, places where you're performing or anyone to a producer, someone to record you? How do you say, hey, hi, my name is Susie. I have absolutely zero experience doing this professionally, but I think I'm pretty good at this. So let me in and let me do it.
But see, that's another thing that I think people, they always say that the one thing that stands in your way is yourself. And it's the truth. Because, you know, and that's why I started doing the motivational talking, because I wanted people to understand I have proof that when you stop standing in your way and you actually open up the possibilities, you can get a lot of stuff done. Because a lot of people said, well, how did you end up working with John Angus McDonald from The Trues? How did you reach out to him? I said, you know what I did? I looked at the bands that I like. One of my favorite Canadian bands is The Glorious Sons.
Another band that we've had on the show before.
No way. Yes. Okay. So now this is real cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Brett?
Yeah.
Emmons?
Yep.
Yeah.
Brett and his brother.
Yeah, did they sit in the seat?
No. Actually, I talked to them at the, what's it called, the Scotiabank Center? Is that where the venue used to be, Air Canada Center? They had a show there, and I had a chance to interview the two brothers backstage before their show.
Well, I've met them a couple of times.
They're great guys and incredible musicians.
Right, and you know, I drove to Ottawa to go watch them, and 4-hour drive, but I'm like, I don't care. They were with Monster Truck and another favorite band of mine. And so basically what I did was I wrote a list of three producers that I'd like to work with based on the bands they worked with. And at this time, I mean, I play piano, but I wouldn't ever play in front of anyone. I don't play that well. So how I write songs is I sing it and I record it into my phone. So I reached out to John Angus's management at the time. And I said, listen, I've got these songs. Would you forward them on to him and see if he would be willing to produce them? And they said, yes. So.
Wow. Are you telling me these are the first two songs you ever wrote?
No.
Okay.
I did do some rock songs with John Angus McDonald. But
right.
These are the first songs from my new, you know, I spent a lot of time songwriting in LA with my new producer, Brent Woods. And during that time, you know, I discovered that I had this other side of me because I'd always wanted to kind of be this rocker. And it was more because I was trying to emulate what Axl Rose and, you know, other bands that I loved, like Metallica and Guns N' Roses and Ozzy Osbourne. And then when I started really searching a little bit deeper, realized that actually I have a softer side. And this is what you're hearing now.
All right. I got to ask you this now. How did you get invited to LA to write songs with folks?
The same way I do everything else. I don't wait for an invitation. I just go.
You just go and do it.
Yeah. And, you know, even the music videos, I consciously decided that I wanted to go and shoot them out in LA. I just want any excuse to be
out. Can you be my agent?
Sure.
She's her own agent, Barry. She's busy being her own agent.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah, exactly. So you're just, why do you like LA so much? Just because that's where it all happens.
It's
is that
Cali.
Why?
Yeah. You know,
I've been there. I love it too, but I just want to hear your perspective. Why? Is that because, you know what? That's where it, you know what I mean? That's where it's kind of born. That's where, you know, stardom kind of lives, right? Is that pretty much why?
Well, you know, when I was younger, it was about being a star and I wanted to be famous and everything else. But as I grew older, it became more about now what I'm doing. I always say I'm a hippie at heart. And so that whole West Coast vibe, you know, I've actually camped out next to the ocean in Malibu. And so what you see in Pretty Little Things, the whole thing with the camper van and, you know, the VW is actually an authentic 1977 VW camper van that I used for the video. And I came up with that concept saying, I want that kind of really cool hippie vibe, and but modern hippie, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, that free spirited kind of thing. And that's really who I am. That's anybody who knows me knows that that's genuinely me.
You were telling us during the song that The Secret Garden was a song that you wrote as a tribute to a specific Canadian band. Are we going to play guessing games, or are you going to tell us?
No, the guessing game is over because I guessed. I guessed and I got it right, Barry.
Nickelback?
No. Oh my gosh, imagine.
That's another story for another day.
Yeah.
Who?
Well, Michelle said two different bands. I said, yeah, that's basically, you know, it's got to be one of those two when you say really big Canadian bands.
She said big Canadian bands, so I said Tragically Hip or Rush.
Right.
And it was a Tragically Hip.
Okay. So what is your, it just, you just love... Like many people, you loved the Tragically Hip.
No, there's more to it.
Okay. I figured there would be, but I had to set you up, you see.
Well, the funny thing is, again, you know, it's one of those crazy stories. I feel like the Forrest Gump of music. I end up in these situations. I'm like, how did I get here? And during their final tour in 2016, you know, unfortunately with what happened with Gord Downie, I got to meet them and ended up befriending one of the members of the band and sort of got a background look at what was going on as opposed to the way the rest of Canada was seeing it. You know, it's just this final tour. You're kind of seeing the insides about what's going on with people. And, you know, it gave me a different perspective about life, what it is to be a part of a unit like that for 40 years and then see it disintegrating. And as hard as it is, it's now about going back inside yourself and finding who you are as an individual. And I think that goes, you know, that's why now the song, it was inspired by that. But really, then it even came back to me and myself because it was the same story. I was going back to who am I and rediscovering that in this whole process. And I thought, you know, this is an important message for a lot of people. You need to go back inside your soul. And that's what the song is about. The Secret Garden is essentially people's souls.
You have two kids, right?
I do.
I don't want to age you, but how old are your two kids?
Well, now you're going to age me. But I gave birth when I was like 14.
You were a rebel, weren't you?
They're 15 and 17.
Sorry, so you were 14?
No.
Okay. But you, yeah, I see where you're going. Okay.
That would mean my son was born before I was born.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, gotcha. Right.
Barry, clearly we need to work on your math skills,
okay.
But it's okay.
Susie, you're a mother. You've got two kids.
I was a mother?
You are a... Okay.
Start that over, Barry. Ready?
I'm going back in time. So here you were, a mother with two kids. Did you pack up the family and go to the Middle East to work?
No, I ended up going there and then had my family.
You had your family there?
Yes.
Okay, so you come back here. So how much time passed then between the time you were in the Middle East doing your radio show and stuff and the time that you meet Axl Rose and decide you want to pursue music full time?
So from the moment that I came back to Canada, it was a year later. Okay. So I spent 13 years in the Middle East. And then when I moved back...
So your kids were born there?
No, they were born here. Long story. I literally flew back like 2 days. You know how the airline says you have to be like no more than 6 months? Well, I was 2 days...
Damn airlines.
...before my due date.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But I had a little tummy, but that's giving too much information. Anyhow, I told them I was 6 months, came back, gave birth here, and then flew back there a week later with this newborn and, you know, ended up living there for the next 13 years. And it wasn't until 4 years ago that I decided to move back to North America. And then a year later, after I moved back, I was having a birthday, and that's when the whole thing happened with Axl.
What do your kids think about mom doing this?
Well, you know, people ask me that and they think, isn't it crazy when they see what you're doing now? And I go, no, because I've never been a conventional mom. I'm very, you know, again, hippie, right? But I could be less of a hippie when I was in the Middle East. Now I'm full-blown hippie. But, you know, they still saw a side of, they would see their friends' moms who are really, you know, even the way they dress would be a little bit more conservative and so on. Whereas I'm always in jeans and a t-shirt and really free-flowing and open-minded. And, you know, we talk about a lot of things. And I always had music going on, even though I wasn't writing music or performing, but music was a big part of our lives. My kids know all the words to Guns N' Roses songs. You know, I'm a good mom that way.
So you're cool. As far as moms go, your kids think you're like the coolest, right?
No, they actually say, they're like, Mom, you're so lame, you know, and they'll watch my videos. I'm like, show your friends. You know, I'm trying to get views. And they're like, no, we're not showing our friends. And so what I do is when my son's playing like his Xbox or whatever, and he goes away for a second, go get something to drink, I'll put on the headset and I'll talk to his friend, say, listen, hey, this is Wissam's mom. And you, if you want to continue playing with my son, you got to go to YouTube right now. Look up Susie Corey. I want to see a share, like, subscribe, everything. And then I get off the headset and he doesn't know what's going on.
Oh, really? That's good.
Yeah.
That's smart. That's smart parenting right there, because you still kind of, well, you're also interacting with the kids at the same time,
yeah,
which is fantastic. So it's interesting, too, because you talk about, you know, being free and everything. So was the entire experience over in the Middle East kind of, it eventually got to you? Is that, is that eventually kind of, well, you know what I mean, in terms of, because yeah. The way you're describing it to me, too, is that a lot of things were on lockdown in terms of yourself, right? So you were in a job that you liked that was a creative outlet, but not your full creative outlet, because you are singing and songwriting and doing, you know, living your true passion here. And same thing, you talk about like your style, your lifestyle and everything like that. So it's almost as if you came here and you're like, all right, now it's time to really live like my authentic self. And we talked with Marshall Dane, and I'm a big person into I believe a lot in terms of like the universe and energy and what you give, what you receive. Synchronicity is, you know, when your soul is in alignment with what you should be doing, then things come to you and you get signs and symbols in terms of you're on the right path, right? So you saying that, oh, I want to meet Axl Rose and I'm going to go and do it, and then going to Hollywood and doing the improbable, that was the biggest sign to you, right? But that's,
yeah,
you can't ignore those things. So there must have been some other things that happened to you in the Middle East that you were like, okay, I can't ignore this feeling anymore, that this is not for me and I need to go back to North America. Were there any certain instances that really kind of, I kind of want to say, woke you up to the point where it's like, all right, I'm done. You snapped out of it and you had to leave?
Well, you know, I want to be fair in saying that those years that I spent there,
you love them too. Yes. Yeah.
Well, it was interesting and I learned so much. And, you know, I really have a lot of people to thank for stuff that it's a part of who I am now. And I grew up in Canada and not necessarily knowing my heritage. I'm Middle Eastern. I was born in Beirut and I came here when I was 8 months old. So I never even knew how to speak Arabic. So, you know, because in our household, we basically spoke English a lot of the time. So when I moved back there, it gave me an opportunity to know who I was, my roots.
Beautiful,
I got to know family. My kids had a great upbringing. So there's a lot of positives to
it. Absolutely.
Yeah. But what happened was now my kids were growing into teenagers and I really wanted them to make sure that they had an open mentality. And although we traveled a lot, because I was also working for an airline there, and you know, they've seen the world, and so they weren't so close-minded and very narrow-minded, but I really felt it was time for them to come here and experience really what it is to live in North America. And now that they'll be, you know, graduating and so on and moving on to careers, the possibilities were just that much more.
Are you getting to the point, Susie, where the full-time job with the airline, where, I mean, you've worked your way up and you're doing very well there, and I imagine you're making a decent living. Is there a time where you're going to say, you know what, it's time to cut the cord there and the security and all that money that I'm making and that, because I need to go for this, because if I'm going to make it and have my dream come true as a musician, I can't be working 40 hours a week somewhere else.
Well, you know, people ask me about that and they're like, how do you balance this? And the way I say it is, when you're doing something you love and it's your passion, to me, the other side of it, I don't feel like I'm doing a lot of work, even though I basically don't sit. But, you know, you start filtering out things. I'm like, okay, I don't watch TV. I don't need to do that. It's really a waste of time for me. So yeah,
speak for yourself.
Yeah, Harry, I shouldn't be saying that.
Netflix shows, okay?
You're going to really hate me for saying this. I don't even watch hockey.
No, that's me.
That's you're going to insult Michelle.
No, I'm not insulted.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But that's my job too, right?
Yes.
So that's another part of
right.
it.
Right.
Yeah. But you know, I'm also passionate about my other job in the yeah. airlines. And people know that who work with me go, you know, why are you always smiling? Because I love what I do. I really do. I love people. I love passengers. Even when people yell at me, it's all good.
Do you sing at them? Do you sing on the job?
I actually created a song for our airline. And it was kind of like an impromptu thing. So, and the higher ups thought it was kind of creative. So I thought, okay, well, maybe if you need a jingle, I can come up.
Oh, you would be
that.
A blast at the company Christmas party, I think, right?
Yes, and I don't even need drinks.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But you didn't answer my question.
What was your question?
Will you, if this continues on the trajectory it's on right now, and all of a sudden, you know, the agency wants you to go on tour and you now have an album out and you're performing all over, you know, Canada, the world, wherever.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to take an 8-month leave of absence here to go on tour. Are you willing to give up the job at the airline when, and I'm saying when, not if, when this becomes very fruitful for you?
Right. Well, I think, you know, I mean, there's no denying the fact that anybody who gets into something, especially for me, I've always said I do things 100%. I don't do things halfway. And when I made the decision to get into this, I've always been very honest with my employer, saying, you know, this is a big part of my life and this is where I'm trying to create something. And of course, you hope that it brings success. But until it does, you know, you appreciate what you do have and what you're doing and still give 100% to, you know, I started in airlines years ago. And the reason I did is because I love the whole idea of travel, seeing the world. I wanted my kids to do that, and it affords me that opportunity. So it's a great thing.
A few weeks ago, we were on stage at Timothy's in Etobicoke, great place, and you came up on stage and sang Stop Dragging My Heart Around with me, and we're going to attempt to do this live. Now, I have no band with me. I have my acoustic guitar. We have no reverb on our voices, right? No special effects. Jody, do you have any reverb you can get us here?
Jody's like, what the heck is that?
I almost spit out my water.
Okay, clearly then we don't have any reverb.
Yeah. Yes. All right, so let's do a little Stop Dragging My Heart Around, okay?
Sure.
Baby, you come knocking on my front door. Same old line you used to use before. I said, yeah, well, what am I supposed to do? I didn't know what I was getting into. So you had a little trouble in town. Now you're dragging some demons down. It's hard to think about what you wanted. It's hard to think about what you lost. This doesn't have to be the big get even. This doesn't have to be anything at all.
I know you really want to tell me goodbye.
Ooh.
I know you really want to be your own girl.
Baby, you can never look me in the eye. Thank you. dragging my heart around.
One more.
Stop dragging my heart around.
Woo!
Yeah. Unfortunately,
that was awesome. Oh my God. Yay.
Thank you.
Sorry, I'm the only one.
No rehearsal.
That was amazing.
You got some pipes on you, young lady. I got to tell you.
Thank you.
So you actually had a question you wanted to ask me. So now all of a sudden the radio person wants to ask the host something.
Yes. I was wondering how you got into music. That was interesting to me.
Oh, man. I tell you what, that's a long story. And that's something that, well, you know what? I got 5 minutes. Right?
Yes.
We got
10. Take 10.
Okay. Yes. We're breaking the rules right now. So this is really interesting because I, as a very young lad, wanted to be in show business one way or the other because both my parents were. My dad back in the 50s and 60s was one of those total lounge acts, right? So he would MC,
wow.
He would tell jokes, he would sing. And he, like, you know, he cut a couple of records back in the day and he had a voice that he was pegged as being like, this guy's going to be the next Elvis kind of thing. Unfortunately, he liked alcohol more than he liked the idea of performing music. So, but he met my mom because my mom was part of one of those big dance troupes, right? Like
wow.
The, you know, the can-can line.
That's
stuff.
Amazing. That's
and they,
so cool.
They actually performed together and they met and they fell in love and it kind of went from there. And when my mom had 3 kids, she decided to give the business up. And my dad was, you know, dealing with alcoholism pretty much his whole life and couldn't make a living doing music anymore because back in the day before cell phones, you know, his agent would be calling home asking my mom if he was around. And she's like, I don't know where he is. I don't know how to reach him. So he lost so many gigs that
wow.
way. And eventually they just said, you know, screw this. We're not going to deal with it anymore. So again, I grew up wanting to kind of follow not that part of the footsteps, but
yeah.
get into music and do it somehow, some way. And it really wasn't until I was in high school that I decided I was going to, you know, join a band and start playing an instrument. And I just joined a band by fluke where I had a couple of buddies that would rehearse after school all the time. And I just went and jammed with them one day. I said, I want to join your band. They said, well, learn how to play bass and you're in. I said, okay, cool. What's a bass? Right? I had no idea. So I went and I bought a bass and, the guitarist taught me a few little notes to play, and next thing you know, we were playing like house parties and stuff. And then that just kept going, and I was in this band probably all through the latter years of high school and did that from the age of, say, 16 till I was 21. And then, you know, I got married, and I was kind of doing it on the side. And then I started working in radio. And then it went to TV and I just had no time for music anymore. I was on the road all the time. I'd do it a little bit for fun. And it wasn't until my son was about 5 or 6 years old and he started taking drum lessons from Matt, the producer, you know, our co-host here
right.
from 6 to 7.
Wow.
And so he started, and then the drummer in the band that you saw. And so he was teaching my son how to play drums and they had like a year-end recital. And at that recital, they had all the students come up and they could play a song with a live band. So my son went up and he was playing Highway to Hell by AC/DC. And I said, oh, I know how to play that song on guitar. So Matt said, well, why don't you come up on stage too? I said, no, I can't do that. I've been on stage in over 25 years. Well, I was talked into it. I went up and there was just something that hit me as soon as I got up on stage and started playing. And it was as cool as it was to perform with my son. It just grabbed me and said, you need to do this again. So I just started thinking about what I can do. And I wanted to start a tribute band because I just didn't want to go through the hassle of trying to write music and trying to get people to. So I said, let me just do something that we can just do some gigs with. So I threw it out on social media. Anybody out there want to do a Tom Petty tribute? And a few people wrote back to me right away. And that's how that all got going.
And this was how long ago?
This was 2015, 2016, somewhere around there.
So you and I both had the Axl moment in 2015.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Except I never met Tom Petty, unfortunately, to have that moment.
Yeah.
Susie, before we say goodbye, for those that want to learn more about you, find your music. I've already purchased your 2 singles on iTunes, and I'm hoping that there'll be some more music from you to come soon.
Yeah, we're looking to release an EP in June.
Nice.
So 5 songs, which will include the 2 that you have already,
cool.
plus 3 new singles.
Well, so. If you ever need, you know, someone to sing a little backup, Tom Petty,
yeah.
backup or anything like that.
Yeah, I'll need you.
You guys sounded fantastic, by the way. My voice just cracked, so that's how you know I'm fangirling right now. I just had a voice crack live.
I was very unimpressed with my performance.
What do you
way.
Mean? You were fantastic. Stop being so hard on yourself.
Well, I was so nervous because, you know, I've never done
and
this.
Now, time to take a trip with Jim Byers on News Talk Saga 968.
Ten minutes after 5 o'clock, News Talk Saga 960, and we're a little late getting to our pal Jim Byers, so...
It's okay, he's probably on a beach somewhere having a margarita or something. He's got the job that we both want, and Jim, sorry, I'm going to interject right here and right now, because Barry and I were talking off air, and we said that, listen, we need to be on tour with you. We need to go with you.
Yes.
Hi, Jim?
Yeah, let's see. Jim Byers, are you there, sir?
I am here.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Good.
Okay. Can you want to repeat what you said, Michelle?
I was just saying we need to, like I was telling Barry off air, that we need to take this show on the road. And we could be doing the segment one day with you when you are in Florida, perhaps.
I think we could arrange. We might be able to figure something out. Like I don't want to scare you guys or drive you completely crazy, but it is a nice day in Panama City Beach, and I'm looking out at the water and a little palm tree as we speak.
Oh,
is that driving you crazy?
Well, you know what? I'm in a studio in Mississauga, and I'm looking at Barry Davis right now. Okay,
and it's really
and
warm in here.
That's right.
That's like a 10 out of 11. That's right up there.
So, Jim, tell us a little bit about Panama City. I've spent so much time in the state of Florida. And let's face it, it's a very large state, but I've never been to Panama City. I have no idea what it's like or where it is.
Yeah, so you're looking at the panhandle of Florida, so that big, long stretch that kind of goes underneath Alabama and goes over towards like Mississippi and the Gulf Coast. I mean, in a lot of ways, it feels more like, you know, it's more southern than the rest of Florida, to be honest. I mean, it's, you know, like I was down by the pool earlier, sorry. And,
it's okay.
You know, it was a little country.
It's okay. Just keep putting salt in the wounds, Jim. That's okay.
I'm
don't
doing
worry
it
about
again.
It.
I know, I'm
we invited you
and
here, Jim, so it's okay.
That's true. I keep forgetting I'm an invited guest. But they had like little country music playing down there. So, you know, it is a little bit more southern probably. I find that's charming because the people are a little bit more relaxed. You got a little bit of that southern twang going on when they're talking. And it's a little bit slower paced. It's certainly less expensive than it is in some place like, you know, no offense, but Naples or Miami or something. You know, like we were at a there's a place this morning we went to. I've been here once before on a trip. I drove from New Orleans to Dunedin many years ago, and I stopped here for a couple of days. And there's a great little restaurant called Andy's Flower Power, FLOUR. And he's this great, very gregarious Italian guy, you know, as opposed to the quiet Italians. And he's a really funny guy.
Is that a shot, Michelle?
That's okay. I'll take it.
They're great. And anyway, he's funny guy, and he's like from Long Island, Staten Island, I think, and he talked about how his mom could never, you know, his mom would be able to burn a bowl of Cheerios, but his grandmother was a great cook. Anyway, he moved down here, and he's just a really fun guy, and he goes all around the restaurant, and, you know, the portions are like Florida, even huge by Florida comparisons, and great food, but one of the things he does is he's got a breakfast martini.
What?
So how cool is that? So it's a great drink with little orange marmalade and citrus and a little bit of gin. It's a great drink. And he's out there talking about that this morning. It's $9. So you can go to a place in Panama City, Panama City Beach more specifically, and you can get a great meal or great drinks for probably half the price of what you pay in Miami. The beaches are beautiful. They go on absolutely forever. We were out this morning at a place called Shell Island. You take a pontoon boat over to St. Andrews State Park and a place called Shell Island. It's just littered with shells, but the powder is just pure white. It's soft as a baby's bottom, and it even squeaks. You walk through the sand, and it's such a fine powder that it even squeaks under your foot as you walk along. So it's a really nice destination, and they're it's been a bit of a spring break destination for a while. They're trying to change that around a little bit. Barry and Michelle, they've got a program called Unwind that we're supposed to go to tonight. So it's UNWINED, Unwind. And it's a thing with chefs from all over the Southeast, great drinks, craft beer. And that's a fun spot. So you go around, there's like 40 or 50 booths. They've got all these great chefs and you just kind of wander around in the evening and check out great food and drink. So yeah, it's a fun spot.
So Jim, if I were to get there, where am I flying into? What's the best way in terms of transportation?
Yeah, what I did, I flew in last night. It was pretty easy, actually. I did a Toronto, Atlanta, 45-minute hour layover, and 40 minutes from Atlanta to Panama City Beach, because you are pretty much directly south of Alabama. It's a little bit further west than a lot of other parts of Florida. So it's a pretty easy flight. I don't know that there are any direct flights, Michelle. I haven't seen any. Maybe one of the tour operators might offer some. Generally, you do have to make a bit of a stop, but it's not bad. Atlanta's a pretty efficient airport, and it's not a long drive either. If you wanted to come in from Jacksonville or even Tampa, it's probably 4 or 5 hours, and you can make that drive. But it's a really family friendly spot. And a lot of condos on the beach, a lot of relatively inexpensive chain restaurants and things like that. Good golf courses, so that's really nice. Kayaking, the place we were at today, there were a lot of people out on skidoo or sea-doos and kayaks and stand up paddleboarding. The area was hit sadly by Hurricane Michael. Last October, there was a fair bit of damage to the east of here at a town called Mexico Beach. Actually, 43 people were killed. So it was a very devastating storm. I read this morning, actually, it was a Category 4, but it was this close to being a Category 5.
Wow.
And I think it was the third or fourth largest, strongest storm in the history of the United States. So it was pretty nasty. But even then, most of Panama City Beach, which is probably the bigger touristy area, was undamaged. There's, a little few bits here and there. A little boat stranded on a spit of sand somewhere, a few damaged buildings, but 95-98% of things are back under control. And it's a nice time of year. It's not super hot down here in March, but it's really pleasant, 22-23. And if you're a Canadian, that's way beyond shorts weather. Pools are great. Like I say, the food is good, and it's not a really expensive place. So given the Canadian dollar being what is it, about 72-73 cents. It's a good value spot, and that's a good thing.
We are talking travel with the senior editor of Travel Pulse Canada, Jim Byers, who joins us. And Jim, again, the Panhandle is an area of Florida that really doesn't seem to get as much attention as, say, Miami or Orlando because of the beaches in Miami and Disney, of course, in Orlando. And there's no spring training out that way for baseball fans. But there really are some, would you say, maybe some hidden gems around the Panhandle area?
Yeah, for sure. There's a little town, South Walton's a really nice town that people in Destin is a really nice community. And the beaches around Walton and Destin, they're just like you drive along the sand, and the sand dunes are piled up on either side of the road, the little spur road that runs along the coast. It almost looks like snow. I'm serious. It looks like big snowbanks. It's just pure white sand. So the beaches go on absolutely forever. You're on the Gulf, so you're not worried about big surf. It's relatively safe. The water's fairly warm. There were people out swimming today. I kind of waded up to my knees. Wasn't bad. Certainly not warmer than the water would be in California this time of year. So that part of it's great, Barry. There's a really cute town a couple hours from here called Apalachicola. That's a really fun place. They were, I think it was a cotton growing community. They were really famous for their oysters at one point. Now it's become kind of a quiet tourist town, very similar to this in that it's a lot smaller than this. There's a couple of small little places downtown, funky little stores, little surf shops, art galleries, home design kind of places, really beautiful offshore islands. I think one of them is St. George. So it's a really family friendly kind of place. That's a spot where there's a really nice nature center, and it's a really, really family community here more than anything else. It's you do get a lot of college kids coming down from the U.S. from Alabama or Tennessee or places like that, because again, it's not terribly expensive, and it's relatively friendly and fun, and great sunsets, because you're facing due south along here, so you've got nice wide open skies on both sunrises and sunsets, and the dunes are pretty, and it's not that far. It's a little bit closer if you're driving, certainly from Toronto, and a lot of people do drive down for March break. We used to do that with our kids in the minivan and pile them in, and you're probably a good 4, 5, 6 hours closer than you are with Tampa. So, that might give you another 10 or 12 hours of beach time on a March break vacation next year.
Yeah, and so I was just going to say, would you recommend, for instance, doing this kind of a trip, or just what would you recommend in terms of if I had a week off or if I was doing a long weekend, could you do a Panama City, Florida in like a long weekend? Or would you say, you know what, take an entire week, spend 4 or 5 days here, and then check out maybe Tallahassee's close by, Pensacola's close by? What would you recommend to do in terms of just Florida or even that area, the Panhandle?
Yeah. It kind of depends, Michelle, on your point of view and what you're looking for. It's certainly something you could do in a fairly short period of time, even given the on a long weekend. I'm only here for two days and a few hours, and it's absolutely fine. Given the fact that, you know, you do have to change planes, it's a little bit longer. But for me, it was probably 4.5 hours door to door versus 3 maybe to Tampa. So it's not that much further. It's a small little airport. I'd only have carry on. I grabbed my bag off the overhead. I was out the door, and I have my rental car in 10 minutes. I was at my hotel 25 minutes later. So, you know, you don't have a lot of traffic. And from that standpoint, it's great. It is a destination where I would recommend to people, to be quite honest, it's not really a January, February kind of destination. You are that much further north. You're pretty much even with Jacksonville and with New Orleans. So, you know, it's one of those places where January, February, you might be looking at, you know, 15, 16, 18, 20 on a good day. But, you know, if you're really investing your long-earned money and you really need that 3 or 4 days of dedicated sun in January, you're probably going to head a little bit further south. Mm-hmm. But at this time of year, for March or April, absolutely. Cheaper destination, easy to reach. And like I said, there's a lot of family things going on. There's a really fun spot a couple miles from the hotel I'm at called Pier Park. I think 120-something shops. There's a little toy train that takes people around. There's a kid's playground. There's Dave and Buster's. There's restaurants. There's a fishing pier. So it's really kind of an outdoorsy sort of place. You know, it's not as much of a cultural hub as St. Pete or Miami, but it's a really fun place where the kids can just run on the beach. You don't need to worry about them. Have a good time. And look, things like the golf courses are plentiful and, you know, probably a quarter or half the cost of what you pay in some of the bigger communities. And so, yeah, I quite like it, Narnia. Very relaxed place. It's not Miami. It's not the big city. It does feel like the South. And to me, that's a good thing.
I know it's inland and it's probably right in the middle of the state around the Panhandle. But for me, as a fan of Tom Petty, I would go to Gainesville. I would want to just drive by Gainesville and say, OK, this is where Tom Petty's from. And there's the house he grew up in or whatever. But, you know, I don't know if there's much else there.
I don't know. I mean, Gainesville is not far from Ocala, and I was in Ocala, Florida, about 2 months ago, doing a really great trip. And I'm not sure if we talked about that one a little while back, Barry and Michelle, but Ocala is a really nice inland city. Great food, very very reasonable prices there. A nice art center, and there's fantastic kayaking. They've got all of these springs, natural freshwater springs that bubble up from the limestone underneath the parts of Central Florida, and you kayak through these natural springs. The water is as clear as any water you've ever seen, just crystal clear down to 20 or 30 feet. And you're just paddling along, you know, mangrove forests and overhead palm trees to these little canopies. And this water is just like aquamarine clear. Manatees in some of those areas go a little bit further inland. And obviously there's more freshwater life, but really, really pretty part of the state that doesn't get a lot of attention.
You're right, Jim. And
Tom Petty. There you go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, Jim, thank you so much for doing this. We can't wait to hear where you're going to join us from next week.
Sounds good. I think I'll be down in the Cayman Islands, so we'll talk about it.
Oh, poor you.
Are you joking?
I know, it's a tough life.
That's a joke, right? You're just doing that to make us feel even worse about ourselves right now?
Hey, a man's got to make a living somehow.
I refuse comment.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, that's it.
Take care, guys. Good luck. Good luck. Good luck with your March Madness pool.
There is Jim Byers, who joins us each and every Friday here on The Spin. We want to thank him for joining us. And, of course, the incredibly talented Susie Corey. And what a lot of fun I had performing with her. Be sure to check her music out. Please do. Go to her website, download her stuff, and let's see her become a big star like she deserves. Folks, you can listen to The Spin each and every weekday from 4 till 7 right here on Newstalk Saga 960. For Michelle Storino, Matt the Producer McFarland, I'm Barry Davis. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for making us a part of your week.